Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket.
We even look at things that are sort of more consumer-based, like walk score. You know, we look at what the walk score in a given area is and factor that into our risk model.
Welcome, my friend, to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever show. I'm Joe Fairless, and before we get into the show in today's episode, which I know you'll get a lot of value from because we stay out of all the fluffy stuff and we get straight into the good stuff of real estate investing advice, I want to give a quick shout out to today's sponsor, and that's Patch of Land. They are making this show possible, and they're making tons of flipping projects possible all across the country. If you don't know about Patch of Land, then they are the number one company to go to for projects that you're flipping because they have all the money available right now. Once you get approved for your deal and yourself as a sponsor or a borrower, you're going to be funded by them. And then they go raise the money through their crowdfunding platform. So you don't have to worry about all that. They'll take care of the money and the funding for you. You just have to worry about making sure your project's a success. They've got something really cool for you. So if you are just learning about crowdfunding, they've come up with a guide. It's called the Top 10 Crowdfunding Questions Guide. And they're all the questions that you might be asking yourself. And they're all the answers. They don't leave you hanging. They got answers too. All the answers to those 10 crowdfunding questions. So you can go to patchofland.com/best ever and get that guide. And if you think you know everything about crowdfunding, I'd check this guide out just in case, because there are some interesting aspects that you'll learn. So go to patchofland.com/best ever and get that guide. Hi, Best Ever listeners. Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever show. And you're looking at the title, so you see that this is part of a special series. This is the last part of our special series. This is part 4 of the 4-part series on commercial real estate and crowdfunding. This 4-part series has been sponsored by Patch of Land. And with us today, we have the co-founder and CTO, Chief Technology Officer of Patch of Land, Brian Fritton. How are you doing, Brian?
Very good. Thank you. How are you?
Doing well. Doing very well. And we were talking before the show and, you know, coming up with the best angle and approach to take this conversation. And essentially, you know, because we want to make sure that the best ever listeners are getting not just a little bit, but not a lot, but a tremendous amount of value from this conversation. I'm really excited about what we came up with, where, you know, we're going to talk about the technology behind the engine that drives Patch of Land, all the data that you're having to aggregate, and then what the heck you do with that data and how you approach or present it to investors. And how relevant is this, best ever listeners, to our business, where we've got all sorts of information that's accessible to us, but what the heck we do with it, and how do we aggregate it, and then how do we select what information is the most important to present to our clients, our customers, whether it's someone buying a home, whether it's someone raising money for a large syndicated deal or a fund or anything in between. So really excited to talk to you, Brian. But before we get into it, can you briefly give the best ever listeners a little bit more background about your experience and how you got to this point?
Yeah, you got it, Joe. So I oversee the development of Patch of Land's platform and technology. I started the business with my brother and the CEO, Jason. And when we started this, we knew that it had to be easy for investors and borrowers alike to use online. And my experience serves that well. I come from the world of e-commerce, and I come from the world of creating efficiencies through intelligent technology that's easy for people to use. And so, you know, I apply process to the sales queue, to acquisition and other segments of the Patch of Land ecosystem, and I create autonomy in our operations to make it easier, faster, and better priced for our borrowers. I previously worked for a major search engine where I architected customer-facing products. I developed enterprise-grade APIs for non-developers out there. Those are programming interfaces that let businesses talk to each other. And I built a lot of custom billing, audit, and risk systems. I did this for leading brands such as Maui Jim, Warner Music Group, Ghirardelli, Anna's Linens, and a number of financial websites. Before that, I actually started a website design business and was self-taught in programming languages. I actually had my mom sign the LLC papers because I wasn't 18 quite yet. And so I rose that to a couple hundred happy clients, and that's what brought me through college and sort of attached myself to e-commerce and web technologies from there. And because of sort of the happy connection that I've been able to make in finance and real estate, have really grown that into the specialized technology experience I have today.
And with the e-commerce and the web technology background, you have access to all sorts of information, and especially within Patch of Land and the type of deals and, you know, that are being offered. I mean, you've got a lot of different stuff. How do you determine? I mean, you and the two other co-founders, I mean, my gosh, you started with a blank slate. There was no company, and now there's a company, and now it's, you know, it's a very successful company. So how do you go about initially structuring the infrastructure on the back end of the, you know, Patch of Land?
Yeah, you've got it. So a really important piece of everything we do is that our underwriting, like many of our processes and systems, begins with human experience and expertise. So we pride ourselves on having people who really know what they're talking about. And as a technology executive, it's my job to translate that expertise and experience into solutions. And so really what I see myself doing is building a better sort of mousetrap for our people to feed in their data and, snap down on the right decision. And so all the systems that we develop is born out of people very effectively communicating how their world works to my team. So we take that and develop technology to enhance available information and create efficiencies so that as we move into new markets or new products, we can modify and adjust risk parameters. So we know what those risk parameters are, and we develop some sort of hard thresholds at first. And we do that before we offer loans in a given market and obviously adjust those on the fly. So that process gives us a baseline to compare to what our underwriting and market teams know. So we can say, oh, this system got this this loan priced right, understands this market, understands this type of product, and then we can tweak from there. Having this obviously makes it less expensive for borrowers because we can price faster, more accurately, and have confidence in that. It instills confidence in our investors, and we can do everything in a pretty quick order. Going forward, it's a bit of applying very intelligent pieces of technology to what we continue to learn about our markets, our loans, our borrowers, and our investors. So our underwriting is overseen by very experienced underwriters and a full credit committee, et cetera. And then we, on the other side, have built technology that consumes truly blue chip data sources and aggregates that data and then does some pretty amazing things with it. So it performs predictive and historical trend analysis on it. And I can speak more about that later if you like. But that information is then passed into our risk models. And these models are trained in such a way that they take geography into account and they compare sort of segmented trends and other analysis, both hard set and produced by our system in a predictive manner, compares those analysis to our thresholds and prices accordingly. So what comes out on the other end for our internal staff, and we're really excited to talk to you about some of the things we're going to be producing for investors. Right now, to our internal staff, they're provided a multi-factored report and score on the borrower, on the market, the property, and even how well it matches up to our investor preferences. So what that does is it lets our staff investigate each factor from the perspective of each of our data sources and gain confidence from all of our data sources reporting towards some of the things that we're looking at, and we can compare those pieces to our current portfolio performance. One of the other things we do is we use this data and we turn some of the attributes that come out of this into scenarios. So we look at, what if we increase the down payment by 20%? What if the deal was collateralized by another property? What if the market, trended upward in sales listings? And so we were able to analyze these scenarios and again show them to our internal folks and very soon enough our investors and borrowers. And we can model any possible events in a new market for each loan individually.
What are some of the blue chip data sources that you use in your predictive and historical trend analysis?
So we use a number of them. Some of them I can't quite talk about, but I'll give you a couple little teaser ones. We use Onboard Informatics, who is a great partner and really big in the real estate space. They've been an excellent partner in helping us develop not only one-off report data that we can use to help train our systems and inform our decisions about how to price our risk.
What is it called?
Onboard Informatics. Yeah.
Onboard Informatics?
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
they come from the same world as CoreLogic.
Okay. Interesting. I was Googling onboarding for Max. I got a totally different search.
Yeah. Onboard Informatics. So they give us sales data, market data, point of interest data. We even look at how many point of interest markers are within a half a mile radius of a subject property, and what categories are those points of interest in, and how much does that matter to us, and how much does it matter to the market. And our models are self-learning in that the performance of loans that we've done in the past in similar markets or even in that specific market can inform how weighted we see those points of interest affecting the score in the future. And that applies to all the attributes that we look at, not just points of interest. So they help us with a lot of that raw data, and they help us analyze that as well. So they're really good partners. We also use LexisNexis, obviously, and a company called GaiaCT, who I believe supplies some of their data to LexisNexis for borrower background and a sense of who we're dealing with. And it makes the job easier for the borrower too, because we don't have to ask for so many things about them.
What was the one after LexisNexis that you said?
Sure. It's a company called GaiaCT, GIACT.
Got it. And that's for borrower background, just like credit score, debt, liens, that type of stuff?
Yeah. Judgments, liens, any of that sort of stuff. We obviously also pull credit. It's a factor in our determination, not the biggest one, but we pull credit and do all of our standard due diligence on making sure who we're dealing with is a quality person. And then we even look at things that are sort of more consumer based, like walk score. You know, we look at what the walk score in a given area is and factor that into our risk model.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff that I didn't anticipate you saying that was aggregated. This is much more robust than what I was envisioning, because as the end user, you know, you see very beautifully laid out dashboards of information, and there's a lot going on in the background. How do you determine what's too much information to show to investors versus, you know, not enough?
Yeah, that's a great question, and something that we talk about all the time internally. A lot of people don't know this, but as you said, there's a lot behind the scenes. And when it comes to that beautiful, you know, 5-tab layout listing that you get on the Patch of Land website, all of that narrative is actually computer written. And obviously, some of the unique points of each deal are edited, and that listing is enhanced before it goes up on the website to make sure that it displays the points of the deal that are different from any other. But all of that is begotten from our data sources. And so we have this immense amount of, you know, you'd call it raw data. It's obviously been enhanced and reviewed internally before it even gets to this level. But what to show is sometimes an interesting question for us. So we usually take the mantra of, you know, you want to view it like you're viewing a one sheet for a project prepared by a professional real estate investor who's asking for your money. And so we're going to show you the narrative description of it first and all the details about the property and the market. And then the next, you know, thing you're obviously going to want to see is that the financials. So we're going to show you a prepared sort of financial statement, but not something that only certain people can read. We're going to show you something that makes sense to the people investing on our website, no matter the experience level. And then we're going to show you the risks. And obviously, you know, we go above and beyond that. And how much we show to one person versus another is also something that we're sort of getting more used to in investor preferences. Soon enough, you'll be able to say to us, I want to see X, Y, and Z above and beyond. And we'll start showing that to you a bit more in raw form. When it comes to the risk and pricing and scoring information that we use internally, at the beginning of next month, and we'll send out an email about this, but we'll be surfacing the many dozens of factors that go into each category of how we underwrite a deal to our investors and to our borrowers. So the factors that will be displayed on any specific deal will be displayed in sort of the categories of positive, negative, or neutral for each opportunity. And what you'll be able to see is, you know, hey, we really liked the price per square foot ratio compared to the national average, but we didn't like the build date because we haven't historically seen properties that are built before 1950 in this specific area of New Jersey perform super well. And when you view those, you can click on the each specific factor and you can read about why we liked it, didn't like it, or didn't care so much about it.
Yeah.
So they're really going to be able to get a deep level of knowledge about each market, even though they perhaps don't know that market so well. And that's one thing we're trying to do with our technology and our data as well, is real estate is a hyper-local sort of fragmented beast sometimes. And so with doing things like this, we're trying to present it from the perspective of someone who's not been in that market before, and make them comfortable with that market, make them comfortable with that listing, and show them the risks.
Yeah, it's very interactive, very interactive.
Yeah, and then on another level, we're going to be presenting some tools for both sides of the marketplace, borrowers and investors, where they can start to see where we're predicting certain markets to go from our data, what the trends have been, and we're going to show that in sort of something like you see on our stats page, where it's beautiful, and at the top level, simple, but there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes to get you those numbers.
I want to switch gears slightly and just get your advice on web development for, you know, the best ever listeners who are out there and who either have a website or are needing to have a website, it's tough to come up with a polished website if it's just not your specialty. You know, you probably need to hire someone or determine, why do you have a website? What's the purpose behind it? Is it just the online business card, or do you need to be more than that? But just generally, what advice would you give someone who comes up to you and says, I'm looking to build my own website for real estate. I know you're the CTO of, you know, a successful startup. How should I approach it? What are your thoughts?
Sure. So, as I said, I come from the world of e-commerce, and so I've built a lot of, you know, top-tier brand websites as part of large and small teams. And what I took from that experience into this, a lot of people came at designing websites like this from the finance and investment perspective. And while it's all well and good, people who don't come from that world are investors, and sometimes our borrowers aren't used to looking at, you know, Excel spreadsheets all day long either. They want to see something a bit more laid out. What we did is we took that same wealth of knowledge, comprehensive information, and laid it out like a product. So if you'll notice on our website, it's laid out very much like you're buying something on, you know, Amazon. A bit prettier, but you go to the investments page, it looks like a category of products, right? And you get a little bit of information, and you give them just enough to sort of tease in, and is that something I'm interested in? Is that APR good for me? Is it in a region that I want to participate in? So if they click through, you want, you know, different sort of categories or topics of information about that product. And so our description, financials, risks, third-party information, those are organized in a way very much like you might see specifications, description, pictures, reviews, etc. On a product. And so my advice is treat what you're developing to assign what you're developing to something that your audience is going to be familiar with. So this is a rather novel way of showing real estate investment opportunities. And something that is familiar to people is buying a product online. And so the flow is treated to that sort of front end. And you want to make sure that people innately, they might not sort of realize it, but innately already know how to do most of the things on your website.
Ah, okay. So they're not going to come to the website and be like, that's a really interesting brand new feature that I've never seen before. They're going to go to it ideally and say, okay, this looks eerily similar to other websites I've been on when I've purchased things.
Yeah, and you never want to get in the game of just copying a mechanism. But when you're looking at how the sort of purchase flow works, you know, that's been done in stone and researched and tested time and time again. So I would say don't mess with what works. Do your research and you know, assign a few different business models that are similar to, you know, what you think works well for visitors coming to your website, and take a look at their websites and model some of what you're doing after that. And if you've got a truly novel sort of user flow or section on your website, test it out. There is no problem with putting up a rough draft. Obviously, in our industry, security and accuracy come paramount, and so we've got a lot to do. But some of the features that help investors or help borrowers apply or view their investments or what have you, you know, we'll put up a little rough draft, and we'll make sure to ask internally, does this look right, and if professionals working on it. But we're going to get customer feedback, so don't be scared of doing that. It's a sort of a death knell to iterate and polish until it's too late, right? And
yep.
So don't be afraid to get something up that's lightweight and iterate and ask questions of your investors or your customers.
Brian, this has been just a great conversation around the technology that's powering a company, the data that's involved in the process, the specific sources, some of them. I know some are probably proprietary, but the ones that you could mention, the specific sources that you use, like LexisNexis, onboarding, Informatics, not onboarding for Max, which is a completely different search result, borrower background that you use it with a GIAET.
guy acting. Yeah.
Yeah, or that. I was going for the more fancy pronunciation. And then also your where you see it headed in the future as far as a usability standpoint, very interactive, learn more about the market in by clicking through different things or, you know, getting deeper into the deal. And then lastly, the advice that you had for real estate entrepreneurs who are going to be building their site or want to enhance their site. As you said, the advice is assign what you're developing to something your audience would be familiar with. So don't recreate the wheel. Don't copy and paste stuff that you see, but don't recreate the wheel. The flow, as you said, is for buying a product online is tried and true. So look at the flow of other things. And this is very, you know, it reminds me of, you know, the advice of, you know, find somebody who's doing successfully what you want to do and then model their behavior and what they've done to get there, and then you'll get similar results. And so I understand and I really, it resonates with me what you said about that. So thank you for being on the show. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you wanted to mention to the best ever listeners?
No, I think that was great. One thing that I will put out there that we haven't quite announced yet, but we have now completed a relationship with Wells Fargo Bank to where we are now a direct ACH originator. And so what that means is that money going in and out of the platform, so for investors investing and withdrawing funds and borrowers getting draws or their capital for their project, we've taken that timing down from, you know, 3 to 5 business days to 1 to 2. And so this is great because investors on our platform, since we pre-fund our deals, start earning interest the moment their money clears into our account. And so we wanted to make that much faster for folks so that they start earning interest quicker. And obviously, yeah, when you want to get your money out, you want that quickly. And so now it's 1 to 2 days instead of 3 to 5. It took a really long time. That's one of those things in tech where you're always like, you know, that's great, but you never know how much is behind the scenes. But we're really proud of that. And then for borrowers, obviously, that's going to get your draws out to you a good bit faster as well. And we get to automate a good bit of that, which means even higher quality, faster service.
Yeah, the machine moves that much quicker and everybody gets the money faster than before.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Brian, for being on the show and talking through this. And hope you have a wonderful week. I know you were a little under the weather, so thanks for powering through it. And definitely looking forward to staying in touch.
No problem. I hope your listeners deal with my monotone voice okay.
You have an out since you've been sick. So I'm sure you sound like Samuel L. Jackson whenever you're well, right? So it's just went because you're sick.
There we go. Yep.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
Crowdfunding, you've heard about it. Now it's time for you to learn about it. Our best ever sponsor today, Patch of Land, they're the leading expert in the crowdfunding space, and they've got all the answers to all of your crowdfunding questions. Go to patchofland.com/best ever and get your copy of the top 10 answers to the top 10 crowdfunding questions. That's patchofland.com/best ever.